afternoon, you may be seated.
Welcome back to the Third Court of Appeals. My name is Gisella Triana. I am the senior presiding judge of our afternoon docket, and along with Justice Shari Kelly and Justice Maggie Ellis, we welcome you here this afternoon. We apologize for the late start. We had an earlier case and took us a little longer to discuss that case than we had planned on, but we are here now. So I'm going to go ahead at this time and call cause number 325-406-CV. It's the Sheffman Family Limited Partnership versus Los Gallos Mexican Restaurant, LLC. If I can have the attorneys make your appearance and tell me who you represent.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Bill Little and Vincent Friedewald, we're here for the appellant.
Good afternoon. Noel Bryant, Adam Foster, and we're here for the appellate of Los Gallos.
Okay, and is everybody ready to proceed? Okay, a couple of housekeeping matters. We are sharing this live on our YouTube channel right now, and it will be on our website later on if y'all want to see how y'all performed or how we performed. Also, I'll remind you of our timing little machine we have right here. Each side, I'm assuming y'all have broken it up at 15 minutes to open and then 5 minutes for rebuttal.
That's correct.
Okay, so as long as the green light is on, you're good to go. The yellow light will come on when you have 2 minutes to be up, and then when the red light comes on, that means your time is done. If you're in the middle of a question, or more importantly, if one of the justices is asking you a question, please finish the answer. Don't feel like you have to stop mid-sentence at that time. Okay, so at this time, the appellant may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Mr. Bryant. I'm here today on behalf of the appellant in this case, the Sheffman Family Limited Partnership. Just for convenience, I'll refer to them as Sheffman throughout, shorten that bit.
Hold on a second. We're having a red flashing light. I don't think he's gone through all his time just yet. Okay.
Thank you. This case involves a commercial lease in a property in New Braunfels, Texas. The Sheffman is the landlord, the owner of the building, and Los Gallos is one of three tenants that is in the building. This case involves whether or not a right of first refusal in the Los Gallos lease has carried over into holdover tenancy. And just for a bit of context, I think that's important, and I'll factor into my argument later. Los Gallos had a lease from December of 2013 to January 1 of 2016, and they extended it from January 1 of 16 to January 1 of 2017.
And Mr. Little, can I ask you a quick question?
Sure.
I'm assuming that this is one building that has three tenants?
That's correct.
Okay, and so for my clarification, did Los Gallos, the right of first refusal, is it and the subsequent offer, is it just for their part of a building? I'm not sure how that would work. Or is it for the whole building?
It's for the building.
That's the whole building.
That's the way it's worded, Your Honor.
Okay.
And in terms of the timeline, the Los Gallos lease was in effect, as I mentioned first, and then it terminated by its own terms, and they've been in a holdover month-to-month tenancy ever since then. There's a second tenant that came on board in June of 2017, so just a few months after the Los Gallos lease, as it had been extended, terminated. They signed a lease, and that lease had a similar right of first refusal. That lease expired on its terms in May of 2018, and that tenant also held over, and they are still there today. Then a third tenant, Green Botanicals, they entered into a lease in June of 2019, which ran through May of 2021.
May I ask you a question?
Yes, Your Honor.
How does that work if you have three tenants all with a right of first refusal?
Well, that's a great question, and I don't think it does work. I think that only one party or tenant in this case could have that right. It's a preemptive right, in other words, and I don't think that any three tenants could have the same right at the same time.
Who Who was Los Gallos? Were they the first?
They were the first.
Okay. And I don't want to jump ahead of your arguments, but I do have a question for you that I think informs a lot of this. In your brief, you're talking about a lot about the majority rule versus the minority rule in other states. Are you asking us to change the law in Texas to reflect the majority rule?
Not exactly, Your Honor. I think that what I'm really asking for is I've taken a really deep dive in all these cases. I'm asking the court here to just clarify by expressly holding that a right of first refusal does not presumptively carry over into a holdover tenancy. I think that as we go through the cases today in our discussion, we'll see that Texas courts already followed that approach, but it has been implicit. So I always say I'm asking the court to expressly hold it where it has been more implicit in other holdings.
And so you cite to this case in a footnote, Lamar, and said that it was a missed opportunity. Are you aware that that opinion that you cited was withdrawn and replaced with a different opinion?
I am,
Your Honor. That addresses
the
issues presented and directly speaks to a ROFR in a holdover tenancy?
Yes, Your Honor, I'm aware of that. And that was going to be also a big part of my presentation today, just to update the court on not only the Lamar opinion, which came out in March of 2026, but there was another opinion which came out December 23rd, 2025 out of the Tyler Court of Appeals. That's the Healy law firm or Healy Law Group case, which I think is also instructive. But
what
if
is the citation for the Healy law?
The Healy case, I have the VLEX site, Your Honor, which is VLEX-10992675-89. The docket number is 12-24-00350-CV, Healy Law Offices versus Troutman in the Tyler Court of Appeals.
And when did that come out?
Opinion was issued on December 23rd of 2025.
Out of Tyler?
I'm sorry?
Out of Tyler?
Out of Tyler. Okay. That's correct. And so if Your Honors want me to jump ahead to that Lamar case, we can certainly do that. I've been prepared to talk about it.
I'm actually very interested in the Healy case.
Okay, the Healy case, sure.
What the holding was in that.
Yeah.
We've read the Lamar case. I was not aware of the Healy case.
From the March opinion?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. That case does warrant some further discussion today, so if you bear with me, I would like to get back to that case for a little bit at least. On the Healy case, what that case involved was the law firm, the Healy law firm, they leased a commercial office space from Troutman under a lease with a one-year term. And the lease provided, after the initial one-year term or any renewal term, tenant will have the option to renew this lease for an additional one-year term under the same terms and conditions set forth herein. If I could just emphasize that phraseology just for a moment, because it's going to come up multiple times in my argument. This lease, as some other leases, for example, even in the Lamar case, has that language that any renewals or extensions shall be under the same terms and conditions. That is an important distinction between those leases and the lease that we're talking about today. It does not have that language. And I can point to the court what the current lease at issue does say about that, but it is different. It's a material difference, I believe, as well. The lease in the Healy case.
And is the Healy case a right of first refusal also?
The Healy case involved an option to purchase. Okay. Right, so that's the one distinction between Healy case and this case.
Well, two distinctions. One, that, and two, there's something in the contract or the lease that says that they have an option to what you just read.
To renew under the same terms and conditions.
Correct.
You're right, Ryan. Two distinctions.
And so the Healy case, you said it's not dealing with a right of first, it's dealing with option, which the Texas courts have held does not carry over.
Well, the Healy case, it applies the same common law under Coinmock. Coinmock is that 2013 Supreme Court opinion, which is kind of the go-to opinion for this common law holdover duty or holdover doctrine. And in the Healy case, they did approach it under the CoinMock case law, or the CoinMock holding. In other words, they applied the common law principles there to it, and they said that the law firm held over and became a tenant at will because they continued to pay rent, and the landlord accepted the rent, so that's similar to our case here. And the law firm there argued that because it was a tenant at will, the parties impliedly agreed to create a new lease using the terms of the prior lease, so they're trying to invoke, you know, the CoinMock common law doctrine there, which included the continuing right to exercise this purchase option, which it then attempted to exercise. And there the court disagreed, and they held that holding over in a formerly rented premises without renewing the lease does not keep in place a purchase option that existed during the lease term, unless the lease provides to the contrary. Here, based on our review of the record, the unambiguous language of the lease does not reveal that the parties intended to extend the purchase option beyond the lease term or any renewal term in the event Healy Law became a holdover tenant. So that holding, that rationale, I think is equally applicable to the case at hand. We have a situation where Los Gallos has held over now for a number of years, and pursuant to the lease, Section 19, it expressly says that any such holding over shall be a month-to-month tenancy. This court here said that the lease there didn't provide anything, it did not have any express language that would allow these parties, or that would indicate that the parties agreed that the option there carried over into the holdover tenancy. And we're simply saying, in our case here, we have a similar analysis. Nothing in the lease in this case has any language like that either. Now, I did say that second distinction that I pointed out in the Healy case, where the tenant will have the option to renew this lease for an additional one-year term under the same terms and conditions set forth herein, that's an important distinguishing factor in our case, because in our case, in paragraph 2 of the lease, it says this, that the tenant shall have an option to renew this lease for 1 year on such terms and conditions and subject to such restrictions, reservations, and exceptions as may at that time be set out. So I think that's an important distinction, because not only did the court in Healy, but the court in Lamar, and there have been other cases, they've latched on to that language in the lease and under the common law and CoinMock principles, because the holdover lease is presumed to be under the same terms as the original lease. And those courts have said, well, under the original lease, the tenant can renew or extend it under the same terms and conditions, and they use that to kind of piggyback, saying, well, then other terms and conditions in that lease then carried over into the holdover. Our lease doesn't have that. Yeah.
But so according to CoinMock, your lease doesn't have to have that, right? So in CoinMock, it says the implied agreement to create a new lease, there's an implied agreement to create a new lease using terms of prior lease if both parties engage in conduct that manifests such intent, and that would have been continuing to pay the rent, accepting the rent for a period of almost over 9 years, of 10 years, right? So you wouldn't, and I think it was in your brief, where it's, you know, you noted that in all jurisdictions, the express lease language controls. And then absent that express language, you go to kind of the Texas default, which is CoinMock and the other cases about the implied agreement. And so specifically here, we're talking about the right of first refusal. So there has been exceptions carved out of that default, if it's not express. And options are one of those. Options do not hold over. So in your opinion, how is a right of first refusal similar or different to, because that's specifically we're talking about, do we accept out a right of first refusal in the way that options have been accepted out, or do we follow the Fifth Court and say that it does hold over, it does continue with the lease?
Can I answer that by going to the Lamar opinion?
Sure.
And answer it there, because I think that's a case that's important.
And just to clarify, the Lamar case did not come out in March of this year, the motion for rehearing, it came out in March of 2025, correct?
The copy I have has a decision date of March 11th of 2026.
I think that might be an error. I think if you go to the Fifth Court's website.
Is that an error?
Yes.
Okay.
Just because their original opinion came out in December, so it would be odd for a motion for rehearing to be around for a year and a half.
Okay.
Not to say that it couldn't happen, but.
Yeah. All right. Well, the record, I think the court can take notice of whenever that came out. My copy must be wrong.
We know that it's out.
It's out. Okay, so this Lamar case, at first blush, I would say this. At first blush, it seems to support this notion that a right of first refusal just carries over. But when you dig down to the holding of the case, it's not actually what it's saying. It doesn't hold that at all. It relies upon the express terms of the contract, in fact, as the basis for its holding.
But doesn't it have a footnote that says expressly, we are an intermediate appellate court in Texas bound to apply Texas law, and under this court's precedent, a right of first refusal, unlike an option, can carry forward to a holdover tenancy at will.
Yeah, and I'm not sure exactly what arguments were put forth in that case by the parties, but we are not asking this court to find that a right of first refusal cannot carry forward. We're just saying that it doesn't carry forward as a matter of right. And we have to look, first of all, to the terms of the lease. And the intent of the parties as expressed in the terms of the lease itself. And as you bore down in this Lamar case, that is actually what the court did there. So on my copy, I'm not sure which page's number this is on y'all's copy, but says, in considering whether a right of first refusal survives the termination of a lease, Texas courts look for language in the lease addressing a transferee's duties under the lease or continuation of provisions during the lease renewal. Now, I will point out that the Lamar case, it involved this original lease agreement that had this right of first refusal in it, and then the property owner sold. There was four successive sales of the property to different owners. And so that case was primarily focus on a different angle, which is these successors in title, are they bound by the right of first refusal that was in the original lease? That was really the issue there, which we don't have that issue here. So
well,
that
except, you know, I'm looking at it and it says things like, if a tenant remains in possession and continues to pay rent and the landlord, having knowledge of the tenant's possession, continues to accept the rent without objection to the continued possession, the tenant is a tenant at will. And the terms of the prior lease will continue to govern the new arrangement absent an agreeing to the contrary. I don't know that it's necessarily dicta. I think it's pretty on point. I think, isn't that what the case has found? I mean, the whole question was whether there were tenants at will or tenants sufferance. And they said they're at will. And if they're at will, then the right of first refusal goes ahead and survives. Is that not what the case holds?
I don't think it does, respectfully, Your Honor.
I know that that's flashing. Can you explain to me why you think that is?
Yes, because if this court, the Lamar court, or frankly any other court of appeals out there who's addressing this issue, they could have said, okay, here's a quote from the Coinmock case, and therefore the right of first refusal in that underlying lease, it just automatically carries over. Full stop, period, no further discussion. These cases don't do that. Even Lamar doesn't do that. That wasn't the holding of Lamar. Instead, they dug down into the terms of the lease, and they said that, first of all, that the lease provides that a renewal of the lease is subject to the same terms and conditions of the original lease. Again, that same language that we talked about in Healy a minute ago, which we don't have in this case. And then also the court pointed to a different provision in that lease, which states that it is binding on the personal representatives, heirs, executors, successors, and assigns, because that was an issue in that case because of those four subsequent sales of the property, and the court was saying that the then current owner was also bound by it as well, pursuant to that provision in the lease. And those are the basis for that court holding that the right of first refusal carried over into the holdover tenancy. It really came down to an analysis of the terms of the lease itself. It wasn't a Coinmock holding saying that it automatically carries over. The court has never held that, and I've yet to find a case that actually says that.
But weren't they wasn't the discussion whether or not in Lamar it was an option or a right of first refusal? That was a lot of the discussion to determine whether or not it was an option. If it was an option, it would not hold over. In this case, they determined, because to your point, the language of the lease, they looked to the language of the lease and determined it was not an option, but a right of first refusal that did hold over.
My response, Justice Ellis, is that the court did go through that analysis because I think it had to kind of set the stage for its further analysis about the right of first refusal. But once it crossed that bridge and it got there, it didn't actually say that as a matter of Texas common law under COINMOC that the right of first refusal just carries over automatically. Instead, it did that analysis of the lease language, and the holding was based upon the lease language itself, not upon COINMOC's common law rule. If that answers the question.
Any other questions?
No. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Bryant.
May it please the court. Your Honor, the appellant urges this court, although we didn't hear much about it in the argument, but in the briefing, it urges this court to really focus on the questions that the trial judge raised. And it also principally contends that this court should rely on out-of-state persuasive authority to resolve this party's dispute. We contend, and our position is, the correct standard and scope of review, as the Supreme Court said in its Elephant Insurance decision, and in other cases, is, did Judge Waldrop err when he rendered partial summary judgment? Now, that is the standard of the review. In applying that standard, our position is Judge Waldrop got it exactly right. We start with this court's opinion in its StarTex case. And in StarTex, it dealt with similar situations that we were talking about before, where a tenant held a right of first refusal on the lease, and then the owner sold. It was four subsequent owners. And the issue was, can that tenant enforce the right of first refusal against these subsequent owners? Now, the difference there, I'll admit, the difference in that case was, one, we had special language in the lease, but also the lease had not expired at that point. We were not in a holdover provision. And so this court said, okay, let's look at the language of the lease, and we observe that these rights of first refusal, and this court called them bargained for exchanges, bargained for contractual provisions. We look to the text of the lease agreement to ascertain the meaning of its first right of refusal provision. And then the court went on to talk about the common principles of contract construction.
So in that case, it because the lease had not expired, it was not a holdover situation, it was whether or not the subsequent owner, landlord, had to uphold. So that's a different question.
That's correct. Different issue, similar scenario that we have, but different issue. In that the subsequent owners were arguing, hey, this doesn't apply to us. We don't have privity of contract with this tenant. We agree, but what this court focused on was in all those subsequent sales were made subject to the lease agreement. So then that it required an analysis of that lease agreement to see whether it was binding on the subsequent owner. My point just being that this court in that case didn't look to out-of-state cases. It looked to the language of the lease itself and was able to answer those questions. And that's essentially what I'm asking the court to do here as well. Other cases that focus on, and I think we all agree, the language that the parties chose in this lease really is outcome determinative. Other cases that talk about this is our Mr. W case, which did deal with an option to purchase. The difference in that case was the option for the tenant had a 10-year period. And I'll concede that in that case, the tenant's option in its lease agreement said this lasts for 10 years even after the lease. But the question was, is that binding on a subsequent owner? The focus in the analysis was on the language of the lease itself. And then the last one, the 6500 Cedar Springs case that's mentioned in our brief. So I'll turn to the language of our lease. And in the applicable sections of this, we'll start with Section 5, which is the right of first refusal provision. And it says, if this property is put up for sale, the landlord shall notify tenant of any bona fide offers, and it goes on. I'll note in this case, it is undisputed on this appeal that we properly, if this exists, there's no dispute that we properly exercised it. Really, the dispute here is whether this contractual provision is binding on the landlord or not. But to the extent it is, No one's arguing on appeal that we didn't invoke it timely. No one's arguing on appeal that we didn't match the offer correctly. So,
do you agree that the issue in this case is whether the right of first refusal provision carries over with the holdover tenancy?
Yes, and to the extent that, I think more plainly, is the right of first refusal in our lease? That is the question that I think the court must answer. And I'll get to that in a second as far as the holdover tenancy.
In your lease now or in your lease?
In our lease right now, because if we look to paragraph or section 19 of this lease, it's titled holding over, and this lease does have a clause that says titles are for convenience, they're not meant for construction. That's in the miscellaneous sections, but for simplicity, section 19 is titled holding over, and it says in the event tenant remains in possession of the property at the termination of this lease without execution of a new lease, tenant shall be deemed a tenant from month to month. Okay. We are a tenant from month to month. If we then look then at section 24, which has definitions, what does it define as a tenant? It defines as a tenant unless repugnant to context, the words landlord and tenant appearing in this lease shall be construed to be those named above. So in other words, when we see the word tenant in this lease, it means Los Gallos. Tenant appears in section 19. Tenant says we're going to be deemed a tenant from month to month. Importantly, and I really think this is the crux of it all, nothing in section 19, section 24, section 5, or anywhere else of the lease says that, oh, by the way, those rights that the tenant has under section 5 disappear if the primary term expires, if the extension term expires, and if we're operating under the month-to-month term in section 19, oh, that rights under section 5 go away. Nothing in the lease says that.
Mr. Bryant, yes. Let's assume that paragraph 19 didn't exist, but that for 10 years that they've been paying rent, you know, all the other same facts. They've been paying rent, the rent's been accepted, they've been a holdover tenant. If paragraph 19 was not there, does that, do you believe that extinguishes the right for the right of first refusal or not?
It makes it a different analysis in this case, I'll concede, because a lot of my argument hinges on that definition of tenant that comes out of the miscellaneous provisions that's carried over into Section 19. But no, I don't. And the reason I think it does not disappear in this is our decisions that we have in Carrasco, Berrigan, and then this Supreme Court's opinion in Gemini. And in those provisions, let me pull those up. In Carrasco, there was a late fee provision, and the tenant was trying to avoid the late fee and say, hey, I'm in the holdover provision. You can't get me with a late fee. And the court said, no. Look, those terms are presumed to carry over into the holdover unless there's language in the lease that says otherwise.
And in Carrasco, there was no holdover provision at all.
That's correct. There was not. There was not. And then in Gemini, and I want to point out, I don't want to neglect this case. This is a Supreme Court case from 2006. It talks about that the terms of the holdover tenancy carry over, the terms of the lease carry over into the holdover tenancy unless there's some language that says otherwise. Now, it acknowledges that we have a common law, the old tenant's privity of estate and tenant at sufferance and all the stuff that we talked about earlier in the part of the Carmichael opinion. But in Gemini, really, the issue was, and I'll just say that the issue was the tenant operated a gym manufacturing company. In the tenant's lease, it said the tenant takes it as is from the landlord. A new owner came into play, and the building burned down. And the tenant tried to sue the new owner and said, hey, it was your fault. You didn't wire this properly. And the Supreme Court said no. The as-is provision in the tenant's lease, even though the tenant was in a holdover, the as-is provision carries over into the holdover term that's in the lease unless there's expressed language in the lease that says otherwise. So that is, if we go back and what is the rule in Texas, I take issue with the idea that the lease, that this stuff just disappears.
And Mr. Bryant, just to clarify, Jim and I is a third court of appeals case.
I'm sorry.
Right?
Yes,
that's
it is.
That's the case that you're talking about.
Okay. Yes, that is correct. That is correct.
We just moved to second.
I know. We all got promoted. Imagine that.
Can I pivot a little bit?
Sure.
If we were to agree with you on how this lease should go forward, how can all three, because every tenant had a right of first refusal.
Good question.
So
here's
how,
here,
I mean,
here's,
you know, once Los Gallos says, here's my first refusal, now does the other side get to say, no, here's my first refusal?
That's a great question. Our position is, number one, we got to look to the four corners of this lease to interpret it. None of those rights of first refusal were in existence when we signed our lease. Therefore, it's not relevant to how we interpret it. Secondly, though, to directly answer your question, those rights of first refusal from the other tenants are invalid because it's the antithesis. That's not what a right of first refusal is. We get the first call, and our right would trump anything that came after the fact. Thankfully, in this case, it's not an issue. None of the other tenants came up and made an issue of that. It's not something that's disputed at the trial level. But our position, quite plainly, is that those other alleged rights of first refusal are invalid because ours came first. And
let me follow up. So what does it mean? Because, and maybe you can explain to me exactly, was there a contract with one of the other tenants or what? If the owner decides not to sell at all, let's assume it's not with the tenants, then does the right of first refusal still kick in? And specifically to this case, was there another contract that was actually signed? You know, how far did those negotiations go?
The landlord in this case sent us numerous emails asking us if we wanted to invoke our right of first refusal. And the landlord used that exact term. I've got it quoted here, but I'm letting you know.
Justice Triana's point, if the owner didn't actually sell the property, how does that impact your right of first refusal since she didn't accept another offer?
And forgive me, because I don't think I quite understand the question, but we said yes, we want to buy the building, and the landlord refused to sell it to us because the landlord had said they had a contract with another tenant that they preferred.
So somebody else made a first offer.
But that's correct.
But if you look at the lease, which I don't have in front of me, sorry, on section 9, or no, on the right of refusal, it says if the right of first refusal, if the owner gets a contract, then Los Gallos has 15 days.
That's correct.
To go ahead and let me know if they're going to match that. It's not what it says, but we all know what, at least I hope us lawyers know what right of first refusal means. To say, I'm going to buy it, and here's the exact same amount or more if I chose to pay for it. So my question is, yes, the owner clearly said, hey, do you want to go ahead and use your right of first refusal? And also said, and by the way, I'm giving all three of y'all an option to give me contracts, and I decide which one I take. So was there a contract that was given by somebody else, the other two, one or two of the other two tenants? Was there ever an offer that was either accepted or at least taken in?
There was an offer before we made ours by one of the tenants, but not after, as far as I know, in the documents that were exchanged in discovery. Our offer was actually better in terms of dollars and in closing period than the offer that the landlord had from the first tenant. So to answer your question, the landlord went to the first tenant, not go to us.
I thought the landlord had said the other offer was for more, and so therefore that she was going to go with the other offer.
The landlord just said she wanted to go with the other offer.
Okay.
It wasn't based on the price because our price was higher.
Okay. And so was a contract ever signed between that tenant and the landlord?
I'm told there was. I don't believe we ever received a copy of it in discovery. But I'm told there was.
So we don't have any evidence that there was?
No, there's no evidence, as far as I know, in the summary judgment record showing that.
Was there any evidence of the offer that was made?
Yes, there was. And let me go back on that. We did see a redacted copy of the offer that was made because that's what we used to make our offer. And there was some discussion in emails about I can't match this offer until I see the offer that was first presented from my client.
Correct.
So we did receive a redacted copy of the first offer that redacted out the name, and it had the price, and we did exceed that price. So I guess to answer your question, let me go back. There would have, we did see a contract, the original contract that was offered, but we never saw the unredacted version of it.
As an aside, you would not have normally had to increase your offer, right, in terms of how a right of first refusal works?
That's correct. And I think my clients just were trying to show that they wanted the property. And I guess let me talk about that point a little bit, too, because, you know, really all of that stuff only comes to bear if the court finds this contract ambiguous. No party in this case is alleging it's ambiguous, but if the court, I mean, and that's a question of law, certainly the court can make that decision. If that's the route we go, then all of those emails come in, and there's no question that the party's conduct in this case, both parties, acted as if there was a right of first refusal in force. No question. So to the extent all that other stuff comes in, the emails, I think, clearly show there was a right of first refusal. There may have been some difference of agreement on how it applies.
Do you, Mr. Bryant, do you agree with Mr. Little that Lamar Advantage versus LaCour, it can be distinguishable, and it does not stand for the proposition that right of first refusal survives in a tenant at will?
Your Honor, I guess let me answer it this way. I agree in that every one of these cases that we dealt with, the analysis the court goes is into the contract. And all of these cases turn on the special provisions of the lease and the contract that the party signed. So I agree that our case law leading up to that was that we're going to presume that the written terms of the lease carry over into the holdover term. And I think based on this court's opinion, for example, in StarTex, where we talked about rights of first refusal as bargained for contractual rights, meaning they're important, That of course that's going to carry over into the holdover term. That is what the parties had bargained for, and I guess in the interest of time, the idea of this majority rule and minority rule. I don't think this court needs to get there. I think this court needs to look at the Texas cases, and the Texas cases will answer those questions. I think the terms of the lease get us there. But I will say this, you know, and I said this a little bit earlier, the case really boils down to, is Section 5 a part of the lease or not? If it's part of our lease, we win. If it's not part of our lease, we don't. And if we get into the out-of-state majority versus minority rule, this court must now, along with all the other courts that follow it, have to distinguish what's essential in a lease and what's non-essential, meaning because the majority rule, as it's called, but that's been adopted by roughly 10 out of 50 states, it says that the essential terms carry over into the holdover, the non-essential terms don't. And so, okay, parking rules, insurance, triple net, late fees, subleasing, of course, options, rights, and first refusal, but also gross receipts. All of those are terms in a lease that the court must now go one by one on the paragraph and decide.
A quick question. Not to get too deep into the essential terms or non-essential terms, going back to Justice Triana's point, Texas doesn't follow majority rule. They really don't follow the minority. They follow Texas's
That's
rule.
Correct.
And the default rule is that the provisions of the lease, unless they've been accepted out, like an option, they convey with that they carry over to the tenancy at will. And so it's your position that a right of first refusal is not accepted out. It's in the lease, and therefore it carries out because it's not one of those provisions that's been accepted out.
That is correct. That is correct. And my basis for that, again, is this court's opinion in StarTex, Gemini, Carrasco, and Berrigan. So for those reasons, I would ask the court not to rewrite our lease. I would ask the court to affirm Judge Waldrop's summary judgment.
And I have one last question. Unless somebody else does. So it seems that in Texas, the option for purchase has been carved out as a possible term that survives the lease in a either month-to-month or tenant at will. Why, policy-wise, why would we treat an option to purchase different than a right of first refusal?
There is a good discussion of that in the Smith case, the out-of-state, the California case, and they distinguish it and reject it, but that is one of the things that they talk about. I will say this from a policy standpoint. The right of first refusal here, let's think about the circumstances of the parties. This client, they've been in this location. It's a restaurant. They've been there for 10 years, roughly, on a month-to-month lease. This court noted in its StarTech's opinion that we look at these contracts from a utilitarian standpoint, taking into nature essentially the nature of the business activity involved. I'm paraphrasing there, but that's in your opinion. It makes all the sense in the world for someone in that situation to want a right of first refusal to carry over. And it makes all the sense. I gave this example at the trial. I once had a law office lease on a month-to-month, and the landlord only would do it. He said, look, I'm not going to lease you any property, I don't lease to anybody other than a month to month because I just find it's easier to evict people that don't pay their rent. But I had a relationship with him for a long time, the same that Los Gallos does. They know these people, and I think it makes sense to say, hey, look, if somebody new comes into the place, I want some assurances that you're just not going to pull the rug out from under me. So that's why having that right of first refusal carry over in this case is important. As to why an option would be different in this case, I don't think there's a good reason not to have the option carry over as well. But obviously, in the case that you pointed out, that they did, and I will note to the court, there is a good discussion of that in the Smith case, the California case from out of state.
Thank you.
Mr. Little, if we go with you on this essential terms argument that only the essential terms carry forward, in your view, what are those essential terms that carry forward?
Well, and just by description, I would say it would be those terms by which a court could enforce a lease agreement. So, for example, who are the parties to the lease, the description of the property, what are the duration of the lease, the term of the lease, what is rent. Rights such as an option or a right of first refusal, that can no way be considered an essential term of a lease because there are many, many leases out there that don't have that. The case law says that those types of options are preferential rights that the parties specifically bargain for. And in terms of why those rights are treated differently or should be treated differently is because those type of rights, they are constraints on the alienation of real property. Whereas these other terms of a lease, that's not the case. And so the Appellee's Council did mention Smith versus Berman, which is the California case. If I could just very briefly point one thing out to the court on that case, the court there actually said that the California Supreme Court had previous to that opinion held that an option did not carry over because it was not an essential term of a lease. So I think that maybe that was he misspoke on that. But options in California don't carry over, and the court there said we follow the logic of the Supreme Court on that and say that a right of first refusal also does not carry over because it is not an essential term of the lease. And there's more discussion about it there.
And to Judge Triana's questions earlier, is it your understanding that there was a contract between your client and someone else, and that contract was terminated, never reached the end of the option period? What?
Yeah, my understanding about that is that it was terminated.
Was there a contract that was signed by the other tenant and the landlord?
I believe so, Your Honor, but I would have to go to the record to verify that to be sure.
And does that matter for the purposes? If she does the fact that a purchase agreement didn't follow through and a sale of the property wasn't made, does that affect your position at all?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. Yeah, the arguments that I've presented today in our briefing, whether or not there was an actual contract signed by some other offeror and the property owner or not doesn't change the outcome, in my opinion. I think this court can look, first of all, to the terms of the lease itself. And in my short time that's left, if I could just point the court to a couple of provisions, because I think cases like Lamar and Healy, they went, as I said earlier, they went to the lease itself, and the court here can do the same thing. Section 2, or paragraph 2 of the lease, about the term, that's where it has that language that the tenant can renew on such terms and conditions and subject to such restrictions, reservations, and exceptions as may at that time be set out. That's a pretty important distinction from the other cases that said that the renewal is subject to the same terms and conditions, which we don't have here.
I have a quick question following up on Justice Kelly's question about the essential terms. Say we were to go with you. And if we were to do an analysis of essential terms, this would be a new law in Texas. Is that right? Or can you point to any case in Texas that dealt with essential terms and whether or not those carried over?
Well, there are, and we have cited in our brief, Your Honor, some analysis about essential terms of a contract generally. What we don't have in Texas is any case which says, just as a matter of policy, or this is a matter of just decided law, that a right of first refusal will always carry over into that holdover tenancy. That's not the law. That, in fact, is what they're asking for.
And I'm not sure if this is what you were asking, but do you have any case that, even if it's not right of first refusal, where a Texas court has made an analysis as whether a certain requirement of a lease is essential or not essential in determining whether it survives into the holdover?
I don't know if our brief actually does have a case about that, Your Honor.
Your thoughts.
Well, I would just point out for the court, and certainly you can take this up when you're considering the case, but if you look at Section 5 of the lease, that's where the right of first refusal language is contained. And if you compare that to Section 19, which is the holding over provision, Section 5 says that if a offer is made, the tenant does not exercise this right of first refusal, some other party buys the property instead, that new owner can give the tenant 6 months notice to terminate the lease at that point in time. So they aren't, bound by that lease that's in effect for at least no longer than 6 months. The holding over provision in Section 19, where it says that tenant shall be deemed as a tenant from month to month. Under Texas law, under a month-to-month tenancy, the landlord need only give a 30-day notice of termination, and then they're out. So these two provisions right here, they are diametrically opposed. You really can't have them both, because if you had a situation where a third party bought the property after they didn't exercise their right of first refusal, and the lease had already terminated by its own terms, and they're in the holdover provision under paragraph 19, then which one applies? Do they have to give 6 months notice, or is it just a 30-day notice under Texas law? And so I think that's further evidence from the text of the lease itself that the parties did not intend for the provisions in paragraph 5, which contains the right of first refusal, to carry over into a holdover tenancy, because that would create an untenable situation under that scenario.
Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. At this time, the case is submitted. Thank y'all. Y'all are excused.
Appreciate it. Please rise.